We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Cash Considerations Podcast, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We're part of the Blue Wire Network of podcasts. There's lots of awesome NBA podcasts throughout the Blue Wire Network, so make sure to check out everything they have to offer. For us, we're the Bulls Podcast. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm joined, as always, by Jason Pett. Jason, we're just back to talk about our favorite basketball team that makes our lives so much better to follow, to watch, to cover, the Chicago Bulls. How's it going, Jason?
I'm doing all right. Definitely better than the Bulls after another just dismal performance last night against the Orlando Magic in a game I thought the Bulls would win maybe somewhat handily. The Bulls, I think, had won something like six straight home games against the Magic dating back with that probably like a couple years. The Bulls just beat the Magic a couple weeks ago, 90-80 in an ugly game. Larry Markin had one of his best games of the season that night. And I kind of thought just like after they played the Raptors tough, we'll talk a little more about that game as well. They played the Raptors tough. I thought coming back home, they'd play well. And absolutely not. Just an absolute beatdown from the beginning. They lost 112-84. They were down by 16 after the first quarter. I think the Magic, who have one of the worst offenses in the league, I think like right ahead of the Bulls, maybe a couple spots ahead of the Bulls, put up, like I said, 112 points. They shot almost 60% from the field. They shot something crazy in the first quarter. I can't remember exactly what it was. I figured they'd come back down to earth against a Bulls defense that has played a little bit better. They ended up at 58% overall, 11 of 26 from three, which is 42%. Just a complete beating basically from the get-go. And just disappointing showing. Like the Bulls have had games under new head coach Jim Boylan where they've been competitive, but then they've also been blown out. I looked this up. They've played 14 games out under Boylan. They're 5-9. Yesterday was like the fourth or fifth game where they've lost by at least 19 points or more. So like they've had some of these games where they're a bit more competitive. They lost by six to the Raptors only on the road in game. I thought they would get blown out, but they've also just had these awful games where they've gotten absolutely torched. So like it's just been tough to just continue watching this. And there was some more kind of some more controversy after this game as well, involving a lot of it was around rookie Wendell Carter Jr. He only played, I think, 13 minutes. He's 0 points, one rebound, 0-5 shooting, and Boylan basically benched him for most of the second half. And he had some reasoning after the game about how like you can learn from sitting from the bench. Like,
well, sometimes you can learn by sitting too.
Boy. Yeah, and he talked about like introspection, blah blah blah. And it's like, and Darnell Mayberry on The Athletic, his game column last night was just kind of a whole thing about Wendell's minutes under Boylan about how they've come down a bit. I know some of it has to do with his fouling, but like a game like last night, 13 minutes, I know it was a blowout, but like you'd still think he'd play a little more than 13 minutes. And Carter played one of his best games of the season against the Raptors the other night, which made it so disappointing what happened yesterday. Just getting barely any minutes, getting torched by Vucevic. What do you make of what happened with Wendell Carter Jr.? What has happened with him lately? And just like his whole progression this season, and especially under Boylan.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. His last two games were two of his better games of the season. In a win against the Wizards on Friday, December 28th, he had 17 points, 13 rebounds, 3 blocks, 2 assists, still 5 fouls, in 38 minutes on 8-10 shooting from the field. Bulls win that game. Carter was arguably their best player on the floor. And then a couple days later on Sunday against the Raptors, Bulls lose by 6 in Toronto, but Carter, another good game, 16 points, 11 boards on 6 of 10 shooting. To me, it's completely ridiculous, this thought that Wendell Carter can learn by sitting. I mean, that may be true for a lot of players, but I think that we've seen that Wendell Carter is not your typical 19-year-old this year. Really, the number one objective of this entire bowl season should be developing players like Carter, especially with Lauri Markkanen missing the first couple months of the season. Like, the reason Jim Boylan is in place right now, his main objective should be to get Carter and Markkanen all the reps on the court that they can handle. I don't think that Wendell Carter is sitting there after that game against the Magic and being like, you know what, I really learned something by getting my ass kicked against the Magic and by not coming back in. Note that Boylan did put in Lauri Markkanen when they were down 28 in the fourth quarter. Mo Bamba, the Magic's rookie center, who has taken two spots ahead of Carter, he was playing most of the fourth quarter. That one, it would have been nice to see Carter go up against him as, you know, two of the future centers in the East. Instead, Carter gets benched. I just think it's just more boiling bullshit, man. And it's like, what I keep coming back to is, like, I'm just expecting Mike Ditka to, like, bust into the locker room and, like, start firing these guys up with some, like, fake-ass bullshit motivational speech or Lee Elia. That's, like, that's the cloth that Boylan is cut from. Like, that fiery, hard-nosed, old-school Chicago coach. And there's been plenty of examples of those guys through the years. I think Ozzie Guillen was probably one of those guys. Tibbs certainly was sort of like the last one of those guys left in today's NBA. But that's just not going to resonate with players in this locker room or just around the league. If you want to talk about Boylan being under contract next year, John Paxson giving Boylan sort of a vote of confidence already and saying the plan is for Boylan to be the head coach of the Bulls next year, no free agent's going to want to come into this. When they just see the clown show, the amateur hour shit that Boylan is running, to me, like, dude, Wendell's got to be on the floor, even if you're getting your ass kicked. To play 13 minutes in a game where he shot 0 for 5, doesn't score, finishes with only one rebound and 3 fouls, it's just not the right way to be running this thing. And now, do I think it's, like, detrimental to Wendell long term to only play 13 minutes in this game? No, not really. I mean, he's going to have a long career ahead of him. And even though this season I think has been maybe slightly more uneven than a lot of us were expecting, he's going to have to learn by being out there. So regardless of the fact that, you know, Wendell handled it the right way after the game, he said all the right things in the media. He was like, yeah, you know, I wasn't playing with enough intensity. I have to be perfect out there. A small mistake can kill you in the NBA where it doesn't in college or in high school. I still think that this is just garbage and that Carter's got to be out there. It's inexcusable for him to play 13 minutes.
Yeah, totally agree. And in terms of like long-term stuff, yeah, I feel like he's going to be fine. We know the guy, he's smart, hard worker. And like we just saw him play some really good games. Like, he's going to have his bad games. It happens to rookies. You would just rather see him on the court and hopefully he does play more moving forward. I guess if we do want to talk about something more positive of Wendell Carter, we mentioned those last few games against the Wizards. I wasn't able to see that much of the Wizards game, but that Raptors game I watched all of. It was an absolutely hideous game to watch. Absolute, basically, dog shit. But Wendell was just really, really good. And just a lot of the stuff in terms, I think he didn't have a foul, or he had maybe one foul. And we saw what he could do as a possible backbone of the defense. We've seen it throughout points of this year as possible backbone of a solid defense moving forward, just challenging shots at the rim. The Raptors, I think, shot something like 18 of 36. It was either in the paint or at the rim. Some of that was the Raptors just missing their own layups. I was noting all game that they were just botching a bunch of layups. Kawhi missed a bunch. Fred VanVleet was throwing up garbage at the rim. So was D'Lo Wright. But some of that was on Wendell Carter just being there, being in the right spots, challenging with his length, which is something that was really nice to see against a really good team. Like, I'm not totally sure like how much this Bulls supposed defensive improvement. Again, the Magic just beat their ass, like, and the Bulls have had other games where they've gotten their ass beat. But there have been games where they have held teams low point totals, and we've seen Wendell Carter be a legitimate anchor in the middle. So I guess just like with him, we're just gonna have to hope we see more kinds of the games like that, more often that, where he doesn't foul, where he's protecting the rim, even if he's not necessarily blocking shots, just altering shots at the basket. And I thought he did a really good job of that in that Raptors game. I'm not sure how much of that game that you saw, but that was one of his, I think, more impressive games of the season, even if his overall numbers didn't quite reflect that.
Yeah, but you know, to just tie it back to like the overall larger point of like what is there to watch for the rest of this bowl season? Yeah. Obviously, the Bulls are hurtling towards the top of the lottery. The only question at this point is like, where are they going to be slotted in when the ping pong balls get bounced? Right now, the Bulls have the fourth worst record in the league at 10-28. The Cavs have two less wins; they're 8-30, and Atlanta only has one more than the Bulls. So it looks like the Bulls are going to be in that top five. Are they going to be fourth? Are they going to be fifth? I mean, we don't know. We're not out here saying the Bulls should like lose games on purpose. What the Bulls should be doing is just developing their younger players, playing them together, and just seeing where that takes them. Like, the rest of this season should mostly be about Carter and Markkanen trying to figure out if they can play together. I think there's a lot of people who see Markkanen just with the way the league is shifting and is like, you know, he's a 7-footer. Should he be a 5? You don't see a lot of 4s who are sort of traditional big men like Markkanen is taking out, you know, the elite shooting that he offers. But it's like those two guys are going to need to be on the floor to learn how to play off each other. That's why this is so upsetting. It's like, what the fuck are we even doing with this season if we're not playing Carter and Markkanen together all the minutes that they can? Instead, it's Boylan trying to, you know, teach these kids a lesson. It's like an overcorrection of all of the worst stereotypes people make about millennials. And that's what Jim Boylan's like raging against in his time as Bulls head coach. It's so frustrating to watch.
Yeah, it is tough. And I was looking up some numbers after the game yesterday, and just we talk about like the young guys playing together, and we'll obviously include Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine in that. But I was looking up, they have had some moments lately where the offense has been better. I know the Wizards game started really ugly, but I know they played a really good third quarter. They closed the game out together, so like that was nice to see, even though the Wizards are basically all hurt, although they've somehow won a couple games in a row with like nobody on the team besides Beal and some of those other guys, with John Wall being hurt. But they've had some stretches of competence. So the Raptors game, they had a nice little stretch in the third quarter as well, among a whole bit of ugliness. But looking at some of the offensive numbers, like Lowry, I was looking, I mean, overall, I guess, just overall, the Bulls have, since Boylan has taken over, I believe their offensive rating is something like 98.1 or 98.3, something like that, which is 5 points per 100 possessions worse than the next closest team, which is the Magic. So like yesterday, they like the Magic, obviously huge O rating, so they went up. Bulls were awful O rating, they went down. So a 5-point difference there over the last 14 games, which is like, that's insane. Like, and this is with Chris Dunn back, Lauri Markkanen back. LaVine missed some time, but he's played the majority of those games. So like the fact that their offense is just going in the opposite direction, while the defense has gotten better for the most part, their overall numbers are pretty good. I just saw a stat that said their half court defense has been very, very good under Boylan, which from the eye test that they have been playing a bit harder. They've been closing out better, doing that kind of stuff. But the offense has just been going in the opposite direction. And that's even with these young guys on the court. I think I looked up their like four man data. I think with all four key core guys was like something in the low to mid 90s. I think LaVine, Dunn, Markkanen were like at 95. In Lowry's minutes, just himself, his offensive rating, on-court offensive rating is like 97. These are all just really troubling numbers. And like you talk about, they're not going to try to lose games, but we want to see some positive development here in terms of at least their offense. Like we've seen some on defense. I'm still skeptical about how legit that is, because we've seen them just get walloped in like a third of these games. Their defense has been absolutely torched, and they've had a few other games with, I think, some outlier performances, but with the offense just like not even stepping forward, it's going backward. Like that's troubling to see. Like we're going to have to, and I know Stefan Noah also wrote something about at the Athletic about the offense and like being skeptical about it actually ever getting better. Like I'm not going to say it's definitely not, because I think these guys are too talented to not at least get a little better, but it is troubling. And like we do have to be patient, but it is very troubling to see just how bad these numbers are with guys that are supposed to be talented. While I want to I'll crap on Boylan as much as I want, this offensive system is retrograde stuff. Like it also does make you wonder just like how actually good are some of these guys? Like I don't want to just blame the coach on this and say like maybe the talent isn't quite as good as some people think it may be. So like it's something we're going to have to keep an eye on, because so far the offense has just been a fucking joke, unwatchable, which some of that is the coaching, but some of it has also been the players.
Yeah, I think it just comes down to the fact that if the Bulls aren't the Bulls aren't developing their young guys, what are you doing this year? I still want to see more Chris Dunn, too. It's like we haven't gotten a great read yet on the Zach LaVine-Chris Dunn pairing. Obviously, Zach LaVine coming back from the ankle injury. He said after the game against Toronto that it was still bothering him, so we haven't seen those two guys develop much chemistry. It's like anyone could tell you watching this Bulls season what they need to do is just put out their five young guys and see if you can make it happen. I do think Chandler Hutchinson's been he's been interesting lately. What have you made of his play? Because, you know, even though he hasn't gotten a huge opportunity yet, he did have 11 points against Toronto in 14 minutes in that game. He went 5 of 5 from the field. He hit a three. He had 22 minutes against the Magic yesterday, went 3 of 5 from the field, only 6 points. But do you have any faith in him? It's like the obvious lineup here should be Dunn at point guard, LaVine at the two, Hutchinson at the three, with Markkanen and Carter. Give me that five-man lineup for as long as possible this year.
Yeah, I just wrote something at Forbes the other day. Just about you need to play Hutchinson more. Like, he hasn't shown that much. There's oftentimes he's looked invisible. I've compared him to how Tony Snell looked on the Bulls when he first started. He's oftentimes just kind of wandering around out there. You won't notice him for long stretches at a time. But like, solid defender at the very least. His offense has shown some flashes. You mentioned that Raptors game. He made all five of his shots. Had a couple really nice finishes, especially with the offhand. He blew past OG Anunoby. On a nice drive and finished with his left hand. So like, he's shown some things, but like, he only played in that game, he played 14 minutes despite having one of his best games of the season. He played 14 minutes. Justin Holiday played 40. Justin Holiday, who's been in a huge slump lately, his trade value going right into the shitter. I mean, Justin Holiday is no really future on this team. Like, he's going to be a free agent. Like, the Bulls absolutely have to trade him at some point before the deadline. They should be able to get something for him, even with this slump. Like, I feel like he's probably slumping because he's playing too many minutes. Like, this isn't the role for him. He shouldn't be playing 35 minutes a game, which is a career high by like five minutes per game. Like, Justin Holiday should be playing 20 to 25 minutes off a bench somewhere on a contender. Like, even if they like, so the front office like needs to kind of fix this problem in itself by just trading Holiday. But for as long as he's going to be around, like, just take 10 of Holiday's minutes or whatever and give those 10 Hutches. And I know with Portis out as well and with Jabari Parker out of the rotation, which is just a whole other just goofy thing at this point that he's not even playing at all. But like, I know they've been playing Hutch a bit as like a backup small ball four, but like, just give some of Holiday's minutes to him. In that Raptors game, Hutch had a nice driving basket, ended the third quarter on a three. And so that was like a 4 or 5 minute stint, maybe something like that, maybe a little longer. And then Boylan pulls him and doesn't play him at all in the fourth quarter. Holiday plays all the fourth quarter. I don't think he scored a point in that fourth quarter. And they asked, somebody asked, I think Casey might have asked them, asked Boylan, did you even think about putting Hutchinson back in the game? And he just said no. It's like, why? Like, why wouldn't you want to give your rookie a chance? Like, throw him into the fire. Like, this, it's the time to kind of try this kind of stuff. See what he's made of. See if he, remember rookie season, Jimmy Butler. I know Tibbs didn't play Jimmy Butler that much as a rookie, but like, he threw him out there against, I think it was his rookie year. He threw him out there against like Melo a few times and like, he held his own. Like, throw Chandler Hutchinson out there against Kawhi Leonard down the stretch of a close game and see what he's made of. If he gets torched, he gets torched. It's Kawhi Leonard. Like, that fucking happens. But like, I would much rather live and die at this point in the season. Like, with your young guys, like you mentioned, play those five guys as a closing lineup. Play Hutchinson at the three instead of closing with Justin Holiday, who's shooting like 20-some percent from three over the last couple weeks. It doesn't make any sense to me at this point. Like, I would understand if like they were in a playoff spot and you thought that Justin Holiday gave you a better chance to win games. But like, right now, when you're 10-28, whatever, they turned 27 the other day, like, play your young guys and give Hutch a chance.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's probably all that needs to be said for that disaster of a Magic game. Just another contest where Casey Johnson gets to tweet out his 30-point deficit alert. It's like the theme of the whole season, man. The Bulls are just getting their teeth kicked in. You can talk about them making incremental improvements any way you want to, but like, even the real question to me is like, are Boylan's philosophies, are those good for the long-term development of the players? And that's where I have a hard time buying into the fact that they are. Like, yeah, they could make, you know, improvements in terms of their defensive efficiency. But at the same time, you know, the offense since Boylan took over is 5 points worse per 100 possessions than the next worst team in the league. So even if they are like taking some steps forward, it's like every step forward comes with two steps back. If you have people talking about the way Hoiberg lost the team, well, this team quit on Boylan within like, what, 3 days of him taking over. So I just have a really hard time believing that whatever Boylan is doing right now is beneficial to the long-term development of the Bulls players who are going to be around the next time the Bulls theoretically have a team that can compete. And with that said, I feel like this is the first Cash Considerations episode of the year 2019. What better time to do some New Year's resolutions? And so I thought we'd come up with a few New Year's resolutions for the Bulls. I'll let you start this one off.
I mean, I guess I feel like we kind of talked about one already just now about playing the fucking young guys more. Play Hutch more, play Wendell Carter more. I feel like that's just something easy. You're 10-28. You're not going to the playoffs. You're heading towards a lottery pick. If the season is actually about development, play the young guys. It's as simple as that. And get as many minutes with these guys together as possible.
Yeah. The first one I'm going to say is just open up the offense a little bit. It's like the way the Bulls have walked up the ball, possession after possession, since Boylan's taken over, their primary offensive option seems to be Robin Lopez post-ups. It's like, dude, maybe in 1988 this would have been okay, but not in 2019. This is not the way you play basketball moving forward. None of these guys are ever going to be in a system again that looks anything similar to this, where you're draining the shot clock, slowing the game out down to its maximum extent, dumping the ball into the post, sort of favoring those looks over three-pointers, which Boylan thinks kills their transition defense. It's just all garbage, dude. So open up the offense a little bit. None of these guys are even going to get the chance to develop unless you open up the offense. Yes, they need to be out there playing. Any idiot can tell you that. But you also can't be putting them in a straitjacket when they are out there. So that's mine. Open up the offense for the rest of this season, see what happens.
Yeah, and just to that point as well, like, we're not asking them to come out there. And, like, there's some teams, like, they're like the Hawks, the Kings, and the Lakers are playing at, like, a pace of, like, I think, like, 105 possessions per, whatever, 48 minutes. Like, I'm not necessarily saying they have to be playing, like, that fast and, like, chucking all those threes. Like, you don't have to do that. But, like, right now, like, last night's game, I think the game was played at, like, with a pace of, like, a 93. And they're, like, 26th or 27th, I think, in pace under Boylan. Like, I feel like that is just crazy for a young team that supposedly has like offensive talent. Like, I understand like wanting to like work on defense and toughening up and stuff like that, but you can do that while also running an offense that can take advantage of some of the skilled offensive players that you do have. And you mentioned the three pointers, and I guess that that'll transition to one of my other ones in terms of they need to shoot more three pointers. I know like, you don't want to just fall in love with threes and jack a ton, but I'm looking at Chris Dunn specifically. He's not a good three-point shooter. That's totally fine, but let me look up the numbers again. He's taking like barely any three-pointers, like just a minuscule level. Like yesterday, Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine, your starting backcourt in 56 minutes, shot three three-pointers. Like that's, and like the game before, I think it's the Raptors, they shot like maybe five, and there was one play where I think it might have been LaVine with dribble penetration. Somebody had dribble penetration, kicked out to Dunn, wide open on the wing for a three-pointer, and he passed it up and then drove in and like threw up a terrible, terrible shot. Like that kind of stuff can happen. Like, so Chris Dunn last year, he did show improvement last year. He was 28.8% from three in his rookie year under one attempt per game, 17 minutes per game. Last year, he was not good, but he was up to 32% from three and 2.6 attempts per game and 29.3 minutes per game. Like that's, I would like to maybe a little more than that, but that's not that bad. If he's going to get up to around league average, like I will take that. This year he is down to 1.5 three-pointers attempted per game. He's shooting under 28%, and he just looks completely hesitant, no confidence out there, which like, I understand if he's not going to ever be a great three-point shooter. That's totally fine, but like he's a good mid-range shooter, and like he's a solid enough free-throw shooter. He doesn't take many free throws either, but he's up to 80%. He's improved his free throw shooting. He's improved his mid-range shot. So, like, get out there and take a few more threes, dude. Like, I don't know if this is just him. I don't know if Boylan is, like, spooking him out of shooting three-pointers, but, like, they need to get him taking at least, I would say at least maybe two or up to at least three. He was up to almost three a game last year. Double the three-point output. Like I said, doesn't have to be a great three-point shooter, but he's got to at least be somewhat of a threat. Otherwise, teams are just going to go under screens. They're going to let him dribble in the mid-range shots. And even if he makes a decent amount of those mid-range shots, teams will let Chris Dunn shoot 15 to 20 footers all day. If he's not getting to the line, if he's not shooting three pointers, he's not going to be an efficient player, as he's shooting almost 48% from the field overall. And his true shooting percentage is at 51.7, which is well below average. So like, teams are going to let him do that, and they'll be fine with that. They'll let Chris Dunn jack mid-range jumpers all day. He's got to get more aggressive shooting three-pointers, even if it's not jacking three-pointers.
Yeah, I think that's a great one. It's like, if Dunn doesn't show that he can at least play a modern brand of basketball, I mean, the guy is just not going to be the lead guard for the Bulls moving forward. I think that's obvious. It's like the days of your point guard being – you know, the primary ball handler throughout the NBA. I mean, those days are kind of over. Like, even 5 years ago, we were talking about this golden era of NBA point guards. You had CP3, Westbrook, Lillard, Steph, John Wall. And all those guys are still around, but it's like Wall is clearly on the downside of his career at age 28. Westbrook sort of seems like he's a bit on the downside of his career, even though he's still putting up triple-doubles every game. And I think a lot of that is because, like, the point guard is not always the guy with the keys to the offense anymore. So it's like, Dunn, you got to just realize that, you know, you're not always going to have the ball in your hands. You need to be able to play off the ball. If you're going to play off the ball a little bit, that means you're going to have to stretch the defense with your shot. He just has to improve that. So I think that that's a great New Year's resolution that you brought up for Chris Dunn. I just have one more. Resolve the Jabari situation. It's like, it's going to continue to hang over the team until you either move on for him or put him back in the rotation and give him a clear role or something. We're still going to get news stories written up about Jabari after every game. We're still going to get tweets saying stuff like, well, you know, Shaq Harrison played 40 minutes in this game and we still can't find a place for Jabari. So, yes, the Bulls have other guys they need to play in the front court ahead of Jabari. Yes, the Bulls have a guy like Chandler Hutchison on the wing who needs to get rotation minutes well ahead of Jabari. But then just get rid of him, either like buy him out or trade him for something. Don't take on long-term salary back unless you're getting a good asset, ideally a first-round pick. I don't know if that's even going to be possible, but you know, at least try to upgrade the roster with assets in some way. Make a decision on Jabari, because Jabari just hanging around the team and sulking for the rest of the year, it's just not a good look for how the season's going to play out.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I was like, this whole situation is, I wouldn't say I'm getting like pro Jabari, but like, I didn't really like the signing. Was very critical of him when he was playing before, but like, I don't want to say I feel bad for him either, because the guy signed a $20 million contract when he did not deserve it all. It's like, he's making good money to just sit there, but like, it's just strange. Like, With the other guys that they have, like, especially with Portis out as well, just like, does he look that bad in practice? And like, Boylan was asked about, like, I think Cody Westerlund, The Score, asked him yesterday, like, is Jabari even gonna, like, be on the active roster, like, moving forward? And Boylan said, like, I don't know. I mean, that seems like a sign that, like, he has no intention of actually playing him at this point. So it's like, yeah, like, just it, him just sitting around, like, I'm surprised we haven't heard more. Like, he did give that interview to Casey Johnson the other day, and he talked about how he thought he's held up his end of the bargain, blah, blah, blah. I can't necessarily say I agree with that. Obviously, we're not in practices. Boylan has said that he needs to show more effort in practice. Like, his effort in practice must be really, really shitty. Like, if he still can get on the floor, considering what some of the games that we've seen lately and the offense the Bulls have been playing. And while Jabari is, like, he's an overrated offense player too as well. Like, he really hasn't helped the Bulls like overall offense that much, even though his numbers look okay. But still, like, when you're struggling that much offensively, I guess just give the guy a chance. Like, part of the defensive improvement probably does involve him being on the bench, but like, just, yeah, you either play him a bit, doesn't have to be a main part of the rotation, play him a bit, or get him the hell out of here. I totally agree. It is just a weird situation to have. And again, just another situation where it just kind of looks, just the whole optics of it just does not look good. And like, stuff where like players talk about it, and I mean maybe they don't care, since like, whatever, they gave this guy $20 million, they did the same thing with Dwayne Wade, and that was a disaster. Like, maybe they don't care if they're just gonna get paid, but like, when you look at how it's, like, a situation like this plays out, I feel like it reflects poorly on the front office, their decision making, and now probably on the coach as well. So it's just like, it's just a weird hot mess of a situation. And I mean, I guess we shouldn't be that surprised that it went south like this, but it's still kind of surreal to see it happening like in the first half of the season already.
And maybe it doesn't have to be said, but I'm going to say it anyway. Fire Jim Boylan. Jim Boylan cannot be the coach of the team for the 2019-2020 Bulls. The rest of this year is lost anyway. As long as Boylan can get his head out of his ass long enough to actually play the only decent young talents on this team throughout the rest of the year, that's fine for Boylan. I mean, this is already a disaster. But move on from him in the offseason. And yes, that means Jerry Reinsdorf is going to be paying three head coaches. He still has to pay Hoiberg unless Hoiberg lands another NBA job. I think the Bulls are still on the hook, even if Hoiberg were to take like UCLA or something, go back to the college level. If that's wrong, someone can fact check me on that. But I believe the Bulls will still have to pay him unless he takes another NBA job. Boylan only under contract for $1 million next year. Well, you know, if the White Sox strike out on Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, Reinsdorf is going to have some money free. Just be serious with the Bulls. Get Boylan's reductive backwards ass out of here. This is not a coach that's going to help you grow your young talent. It's a coach that's holding them back, not building them up. Move on, Bulls.
Yeah, I have a feeling, honestly, that they are going to keep him just for some of the reasons you mentioned. He's cheap. They're not going to pay three head coaches. John Paxson probably likes the defensive improvement, supposed improvement that they've made, and like the energy. But so right now, I feel like even with some of the blowouts and the terrible offense, that they're going to end up keeping him. I guess things possibly could change, like if the Bulls just go like really in the shitter. Like, I am very curious to see what happens on this upcoming road trip. They play the Pacers Friday at home, then the Nets at home, two teams that are playing really well right now. And then they go out west for like five games. Like, if the Bulls don't start playing better, they could be looking at like an almost a 10-game losing streak, and maybe that changes things. But if the Bulls are competitive enough in these games against these good teams, I feel like that's going to like be enough for Paxson to think, oh, Boylan's really, he's really setting this culture with this defense, this intensity. But I would agree with you. I would prefer that, like, whatever, let him coach him out the year. They'll lose games, but they can do better. I think that's just the thing. Like, if you want him to be around for the rest of this year, try to instill that defense on what it means to play defense, to at least get that mentality. I can at least possibly buy that. But in terms of long-term success with this rebuild, give me a coach that will take advantage of these guys' skills, that will put them in the best position to play offensively. And because he just seems like, I'm not going to say perfect, but just like, he'll get you from what, A to B, and then the next guy, like, it'll take you to the next step. Like, he's just a transitional coach to help instill some, whatever, like I said, toughness or whatever. But I feel like you need somebody else long term, because I mean, we saw it in the college when he would coach in college. Like, he wore his welcome after a while at Utah, and like, and he's never gotten an NBA head coaching job, and it seems like we were kind of finding out why. He just might not be cut out to be an NBA head coach, probably a good assistant coach, a good defensive-minded, tough guy to have on the staff. But in terms of like an overall philosophy and running the whole program, I'll hard pass on that.
Yeah. We should look ahead at the schedule. I think you already brought up.
You mentioned Jabari already, but they need to, and I kind of mentioned this earlier as well, they need to make some moves in terms of Holiday, Robin, yeah. Lopez, something like that. Like Holiday, plenty of teams could use Justin Holiday, even in this slump. Like, I feel like if he went back to a more normal role and there's so many contenders that could use a shooter off the bench. I was watching OKC, the Lakers last night, and the Thunder, like, they're starting Terrence Ferguson, like, Alex Abrines is just okay, like, with Roberson hurt, like, the Thunder could use another wing, another shooter. I mean, the Warriors could use another shooter off their bench. The Rockets could always use more shooting, and Holiday loves chucking threes, so, like, I feel like he would fit in there. Like, the Sixers could probably use another 3-and-D guy. Like, their depth isn't very good. So you look at that, and his contract is, like, $4.4 million or something like that. Like, even in this slump, the Bulls should be able to get something for him. And at this point, you should take anything, basically. Like, even if it's only one second rounder, I'd prefer possibly getting maybe two second rounders or maybe a second rounder and taking a chance on a young player. But like, Justin Holiday is not part of your future. Get anything for him. Robin Lopez is a little bit harder because his contract is up at like 14 some million. He's not really a modern center at this point, but I feel like he could possibly be a backup center on a good team if they need. I know the Warriors have been mentioned as a buyout candidate, a buyout possibility, because they really can't have nobody to trade to match that salary. But like, they should try to trade Lopez. If not, buy him out. Like, get him to somewhere good. Do him a solid. Get him off this garbage team. Like, move on from these veterans and just go. I know it's nice to have some veterans around, but like at this point in the season, when you're already 10-28, your season's going down the drain, just might as well go full bore with these young guys. So they definitely need to make some type of moves. I also am curious, do you think there's any chance the Bulls would try to trade Bobby Portis?
How often do you see guys traded right before their rookie contracts expire? I guess it did just happen.
Kelly Oubre. Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I don't think so, especially because.
Obviously, the injuries.
It's too bad for Portis, too, because I think Portis was primed to have a really good offensive year. You know, you hope maybe that is a little silver lining for the Bulls, if only because it'll help them lose some games, increase their lottery odds. Also, hypothetically, you should be getting more Markkanen and Carter minutes. Those are the two guys who are really going to be around in the front court. So I don't think Portis is going to get moved, but I'd certainly be open to the possibility.
Yeah, as well. It's like, I'm not totally sure, like, what, like, if they, I mean, they talk about how he's part of the core. They play, they want to sign him. They're going to renegotiate with him. This is something, a conversation we can obviously have way down the line, but like, in terms of re-signing to a long-term deal, like he basically tops out as a sixth man. I am just curious to see, like, maybe if they get a good offer, if some team offers like a first-round pick, like, would you trade Bobby Portis for a first-round pick at this point instead of re-signing him to what, maybe like $10 or $12 million deal? Like, I would have to consider that because, like, as nice of a player as Portis is, like, I feel like we do know kind of what he is at this point. Like I mentioned, probably tops out as a solid microwave six man bench scorer, which is fine, totally fine. And like, I think like his next contract will probably reflect that. Like I said, 10, 12 million is probably fine for that. But like at this point, given that he's not likely not even going to be a starter, like I would probably take a chance on a first round pick. I mentioned like the Sixers. I feel like they're another team that could probably use a shooting big. I think they've mentioned that they're out for front court help. Like you could possibly look at the Sixers as a possibility. So I would be surprised if the Bulls traded Portis, but I think it's something they should definitely think about. It shouldn't be an off limits thing.
Yeah. I would move on from him if they can, I guess. But you know, it depends what you can get. Like what sort of contract do you even give Portis?
Right. Like I said, I feel like 10 to 12 million. Because I know like in terms of free agency, like the Bulls, they're not going to sign a big free agent. Like that's, we don't, I feel like worrying about max cap space at this point, just out the door. Like, I'd be shocked if the Bulls were able to sign somebody of notoriety because they're probably going to be bad, and there's just no reason for a big free agent to sign there now. So, like, you still obviously don't want to overpay him too much. Like, I bet he came into the year. I can't remember what Casey reported. I think that he turned down $50 million guaranteed or something like that. So probably like, that was probably like $450. So he figured around like...
Wow, you turned that down? I missed that report.
I think that's what he said. I found that somewhere.
Yeah, but like that's some serious money for Portis to turn down, especially you know, sort of given the fact that he's a one-way player mostly. I don't know.
It was 50 million. It was 50 million guaranteed.
Turning down whatever he turned down from the Mavericks.
Yeah, it was like 70 or 80 million over 4 years, something like that. I mean, I figure like he figured he was going to have a big year. So many teams have cap space. So you think he probably figured, you know, like I'll put up some big numbers this year. Maybe a team throws me a big offer sheet. And if anything, then maybe the Bulls match it, like something like that. But yeah, I mean, I guess at this point with all these injuries, like I can't imagine him getting anything more than the 50 million. So you figure like 4 to 450, 448 is probably would make sense for a one-way. I would still consider like a pretty good player, but like you said, still like a one-way player, a bit of a chucker. The injury doesn't help him, and like locking, I mean, and maybe he takes something shorter for a couple of years, especially with these injuries. Maybe you give him a little money for a shorter period of time. I don't know, but I feel like he's definitely not gonna get the contract he was hoping that he was gonna get unless he's somehow comes back and just completely goes off. But I don't really see that happening.
It's
but
too bad because I really do think Bobby Portis is a good guy. If you read Darnell Mary's story on The Athletic,
absolutely
buying his mom a house, Portis just seems like an awesome dude. And we also know that Portis showed up at the Lockdown Bulls bowling event that they did in the offseason. So Portis seems like a righteous bro. I'm pro Bobby Portis in general as a guy. So I hope he gets paid, and I hope that he eventually finds himself in a better basketball situation than the Bulls, because it's not happening here in Bobby Portis.
Yeah. I guess on that note, we will take a brief, I kind of mentioned this already, a brief look ahead at the upcoming schedule, and it is it's about to get real. I mean, obviously the Bulls have lost a lot of games already, but like I mentioned, Friday, they are home against the Pacers, and the Pacers are on a roll. The Bulls have competed well with the Pacers in both losses so far this year, so I mean, maybe it'll be a close game. The Bulls have lost their last two home games by a shit ton. They got blown out by the Timberwolves. They got blown out by the Magic. So I guess if the Pacers keep playing like they are, like that's probably not going to be a close game again. But maybe the Bulls will bring forth a little better effort after getting embarrassed the other night. Sunday, they have a matinee at home against the Nets. Nobody's going to give a shit about that game because the Bears are playing an hour later. I will not be watching that game. Just putting that out there right now. I will be watching, drinking and watching Bears-Eagles. So the Nets have also been playing really good right now. They're on the verge right outside the playoff picture. The Nets won a close game at the United Center a couple weeks ago, 96-93. Spencer Dinwiddie had a big game and look for him to try to go off again. And then after that comes this five game West swing. We might get one more pot in before that West Coast trip starts, but five-game Western Conference swing in Portland, Golden State, Utah, Lakers, Nuggets. Like, that's easily could be 0-5. Like, so again, like, if the Bulls don't bring it this coming next week, they could be looking at something like a 9-game losing streak and a record of, like, 10-35 or something like that. So, like, it could get really ugly here coming up, and maybe that would result in some other types of changes. Like I said, Borland's probably sticking for the rest of the year. I can't imagine it would get fired even if they lost like their next seven games. But you do wonder how the mindset of the team will happen. If they just go in the tank here in these next couple weeks, will they stay together? Will it be more fracturing? Like, it'll definitely be something interesting to watch starting tomorrow night against the Pacers.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up.
Yeah, I think so as well. Like I said, Big games coming up. This is the new year. Hopefully, new year, new Bulls. Probably not, though. We would expect not. Definitely, we can listen to us all over the place. Like I said, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. Like I said, we're on the Blue Wire Pod Network now. There's a ton of other. If you love listening to NBA podcasts, there are a bunch of other good NBA podcasts on Blue Wire as well. And you can also follow Blue Wire now on Twitter, Blue Wire Pods, at Blue Wire Pods. We're going to start upping the Twitter game, I know, pretty soon. We're going to be doing a lot of other cool stuff coming up, so keep an eye out for that type of stuff. So, yeah, I guess that's all I got from me.
All right, yeah, I'm good. For Jason, I'm Ricky. This was Cash Considerations. Thanks for listening.
Take it easy.